In his State of the Union address, President Bush announced his new American Competitiveness Initiative. Now, that's a plan to commit more than $136 billion over 10 years to, quote, increase investments in research and development, strengthening education, and encourage entrepreneurship and innovation. The president's announcement came on the heels of a report issued in January by the National Academies. That report is called Rising Above the Gathering Storm. And it warned that, quote, the scientific and technological building blocks critical to our economic leadership are eroding. Here are just a few of the many points that are made in the report. China and India are far outpacing the U.S. in awarding of college degrees in engineering, computer science, and information technology. U.S. 12th graders perform below the international average on a test of general knowledge in science and math. And in the U.S. science and technology workforce in the year 2000, 38% of the PhDs were foreign-born. Just a few of the indicators of the status of science and technology included in the report. So what can be done to reverse the trend? That's what we'll be talking about this hour. Is the president's new initiative enough? Is it not enough? What more needs to be done? I'm going to be joined this hour by three engineers because, after all, it is National Engineers Week. And we'll also take a look at how engineers are working to get girls interested in engineering. If you'd like to get in on the conversation, if you'd like to make a contribution, our number is 1-800-989-8255. 1-800-989-TALK. And as always, you can surf over to our website at sciencefriday.com. Ralph Windrum, Jr. is the president of the IEEE USA. He's an electrical and computer engineer. He worked at Bell Labs in New Jersey for more than 30 years. He joins me here in our New York studios. Thank you for coming in today, Dr. Windrum.
Thank you very much for having us.
You're welcome. Patricia Walesko-Garland is the chair of Engineers Week 2006. She is a chemical engineer, program manager of the Combined Heat and Power Program at Oak Ridge National Laboratory in Oak Ridge, Tennessee, and a former Girl Scout troop leader. She joins us from our NPR studios in Washington. Thank you for talking with us today, Ms. Garland.
Thank you, Mr. Flato.
You're welcome. Dan Mode, Jr. is the president of the University of Maryland. He is also a mechanical engineer, a member of the National Academy of Engineering. He served as a member of the National Academy's Committee on Prospering in the Global Economy of the 21st Century. And the findings of that committee, I read a little bit from it, are found in the report I mentioned, Rising Above the Gathering Storm, Energizing and Employing America for a Brighter Economic Future. He's also in our Washington studios. Thank you for being with us today, Dr. Mode.
Thank you, Ira, very much. Pleased to be here.
I want to just begin with you from the first paragraph of your findings. You say that we fear the abruptness in which a lead in science and technology can be lost, and the difficulty of recovering a lead once lost, if indeed it can be, regained at all. Do you fear we have permanently lost our leadership in science and technology?
No, clearly. I don't think anybody on this task force, this committee that wrote this report, believes we've lost our leadership in science and technology. I think the concern is that the building blocks for the leadership of the future is what is eroding. In fact, our leadership in science and technology, we must understand, was created decades ago. Our processes and our enterprises 20 and 30 years ago have led to our leadership today. The question is, what will our leadership be 20 years from now? And that is what this report is really about.
Mm-hmm. Do you think the president's American Competitive Initiative addresses some of those issues that your report talks about?
It definitely does. In fact, I think most of us involved in this enterprise since it started most recently last summer believe that the president's State of the Union address and the ACI come directly from the recommendations of this report and really is responsive to the issues that are brought forward.
Mm-hmm. Ralph Windrum, what are the problems facing engineering today? We keep hearing about there is a shortage of engineers. Is there a shortage of engineers?
Well, yes, I think there is a shortage of engineers. And I think you have to look beyond the shortage, and you have to look at what has happened to engineering over the last 5 to 10 years. We've gone away from institutions such as Bell Laboratories and IBM Research and a number of others. to institutions that are much more concerned with current product. If I take Bell Laboratories as an example, when it was operating at full thrust, it was the leading institution in the world of its kind. It had courses in innovation. It had in-hours courses. What is happening is, and we have found this out in the 2005 member survey, our engineers are becoming obsolete. Their ability to take courses is less and less at this point. And our member survey showed that 37% of our membership, that's a quarter of a million American engineers, 30% of them were concerned and indicated that they needed to have an easy way to continue their education on their own at this point.
You talk about the quality of keeping present, keeping up to date with the engineers, but there also seems to be a pure number of engineers that there's a shortage. Let me just read from the National Academies report. It says, one estimate is that in 2004, China graduated about 350,000 engineers, computer scientists, information technologists with four-year degrees, while the U.S. graduated only 14,000. That's 350 versus, 140,000.
140,000.
That's still less than half.
That's correct.
Than what we have generally.
That's correct. Now, I've spent some time in China, and I have to tell you that I've been to locations such as Tsinghua University. A very large number, as I think other people are aware, of those engineers are in fact civil engineers concerned with the infrastructure of China. And so you have to compare the classes of engineering rather than just engineers as a group to understand where the shortages are.
Mm-hmm.
But I think there is little doubt that with the continuing process of increasing engineering education in China and the quality of engineering education in China, they are going to graduate certainly more engineers than we are for a long period of time. I think we need to be concerned with the explosion of the information age, that we will not have the number of engineers that we need for the information explosion, for the innovation that we need in the future.
Patricia Garland, does that concern you too?
Absolutely. We need to change our message that we're taking out into colleges and universities to increase our numbers.
How do you convince someone to become an engineer? And I know you're involved with women engineers. How do you convince a woman to say that you should be going into engineering?
Well, you can't necessarily convince somebody. What you can do is you can provide them information about engineering that would motivate them to choose engineering. What we're seeing is that we can continue to do what we've been doing in the past, going into the classrooms and telling students that engineering is great for you if you love math and science and if you want a challenging career. But why then aren't the numbers changing? Women make up 46% of the workforce, but we've had pretty stable numbers over the last few years where we only make up 11% of the engineering workforce. And as the number of jobs requiring engineering in this country are increasing, the number of students that are taking technical and engineering classes remain pretty stable. And of those numbers, women and minorities are still severely underrepresented. Women make up 55% of all engineering undergraduate. Women make up 55% of all the undergraduate students in this country. Yet we only are at 20% of the undergraduate engineering degrees. And although the numbers in high schools, women are taking equal amounts of classes such as biology and math as boys are at equal numbers, well, why is it that women aren't taking the same amount of engineering classes as boys?
And, well, why is that?
Well,
Where are they going? We know women are good in science and math.
A lot of women tend to go into the medical profession or the legal profession. As part of an Extraordinary Women Engineers Project, which is a coalition of engineering societies which pulled together to take a look at why is it that young women aren't going into engineering, They did a study with some focus groups and interviewed students to find out what motivates young girls to take engineering. And what we're learning is that we aren't providing them the message that they want. Women want to do work that they find exciting, work that they would find beneficial to society. They want to do work that pays well and offers them flexibility. And we tend to take into the classroom different messages. So as part of National Engineers Week, the Society of Women Engineers and Northrop Grumman Corporation came up with a Connecting Educators to Engineering program, which is fourfold, taking engineers into the classroom to deliver a different message to the students, and also to work with educators to help them with the messaging that gets across to girls, to get girls excited about engineering, and boys
what do you bring into, who comes into the class to say, look, I'm an engineer, get excited about me? How do you do that?
Well, somebody like myself, the engineering societies as well, could offer to their, IEEE, for example, would offer to their engineers to go into the classroom to meet with students. Mm-hmm. And in the past, some of us have had some difficulties in trying to navigate through school systems, for example. How do you get with the teachers? How do you get into the classrooms? So part of the Connecting program is webinar training that we're offering to engineers over the internet to learn about how to navigate the system, how to prepare the message, how to prepare the presentations, what type of information do girls and boys want to hear regarding engineering.
Mm-hmm. All right, we're going to take a short break and come back and talk lots more about science and engineering, applied sciences, and this is National Engineering Week. Talk about what needs to be done so that we don't have a shortage of engineers, a shortage of science students. There's a problem about immigration we'll get into, about visiting science professors, having trouble getting to the country. Just a story this week, the president is going to India. India has blocked three scientists who would like to come into the country. We'll talk about that. So stay with us. We'll talk more. Take your calls after this break. Don't go away. You're listening to Talk of the Nation Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatto. We're talking this hour about science and technology investment in the United States, our way of celebrating National Engineers Week, with my guests, Ralph Windrum, president of the IEEE USA, Patricia Walesko-Garland, co-chair of Engineers Week 2006. She's also the manager of the Combined Heat and Power Program at Oak Ridge National Laboratory. And C.D. Moat Jr., otherwise called Dan, is president of the University of Maryland. Our number, 1-800-989-8255. Is there anything, just throw this out. We always hear about the federal government taking an active role in with students and teachers and things. Yet very little of any school budget comes from the federal government, just a few percentage points. School is a local thing. It's by PTAs and committees and taxes and superintendents and boards of education and things like that. Can the federal government really do anything to influence the direction, or is it really up to local people and teachers and people like engineers going into classrooms and changing perceptions there?
Well, there are several things the federal government can do, and if you look at the Protecting America's Competitive Edge Act, which is moving through the Senate right now, you will find that money is being set aside in grants to provide an extra year of education in math and science so that we get qualified and deeply trained people in mathematics
teachers.
And science who are teachers.
That's the real problem.
Exactly.
Isn't it? Yeah.
I mean, in the New York area, we have a major shortage of teachers qualified to teach math and science. And the federal government can have a major impact at that
can
level.
Can it really? And the number of teachers it can put out there that...
I believe it, if it wants to, it could correct the problem by providing this additional training and the other grants and those acts. The merit-based scholarships, the continuing education for teachers, that's an important input.
Mm-hmm. Dan, you say in your report...
I would say, Ira, the PACE legislations, of which there are three, are basically a direct result of the report Rising Above the Gathering Storm. In fact, the senators it would be Bingaman, Alexander, Senator Mikulski, and fourth one, sorry, I've forgotten, who had proposed this legislation, essentially took these initiatives out of that report. And clearly, this report is for federal legislation, which is to assist the local levels. But the point you're making is an extremely good one. There needs to be effort taken at the local level to follow up on this rising above the gathering storm at the state and local levels. That is, the initiative at the federal level has really caught on like wildfire. There's not only the PACE legislation, but there's also legislation in the House, both bipartisan legislations. There's a lot of interest in this. And, in fact, the State of Union address and the ACI initiative also has this in it from the president's point of view. He has about training teachers and getting professionals in to instruct in the schools. He has an idea that we should bring in 30,000 professionals to teach and essentially train 70,000 teachers who are actually qualified in science and technology as their field in order to teach. But the state and local level issue is still left hanging, as you suggest. Each state, and in fact in regions in the state, they should take on the initiative themselves of looking for how the states will organize under the themes of this PACE legislation or under this report, Rising Above the Gathering Storm. In the state of Maryland, where we are, we actually have that planned already on the 26th of April. We're gathering all the state leadership under the four maybe five major themes of this report to essentially see how we could organize the state to put it into kind of synchronization with the federal legislation. Those themes are the following ones. The K-12 theme that we've been talking about is one of them, a very important one. How do we prepare teachers for qualifications to teach science and technology at an advanced level and get that done. Second would be basic research, the fundamental building blocks of our technology in the future, especially in engineering or, say, physical sciences, information sciences, and computer sciences. That's a big need as well. Thirdly is the best and the brightest issue of higher education and international students and how we're going to essentially get the best and the brightest to come and build our technology enterprise from our citizens and, of course, and from others. And a fourth area is how do we incentivize innovation in industry, whether it's through tax policies and tax credits and things like that and other ways. And then, of course, the energy initiative is a big piece of this initiative, also under PACE and under Rising Above the Gathering Storm. And, of course, the whole idea of jobs creation is fundamental. Mm-hmm. The whole idea is to create jobs.
Mm-hmm. 1-800-989-8255 is our number. Let's go to Ed in Lake Elsinore, California. Hi, Ed.
Hi,
Ed.
Hi, how you doing?
Hi there.
Hello.
Go ahead.
Yes, my comment was just about the cost of education involved in, well, especially in going beyond just the bachelor level. Like, I've gotten through pretty well myself because I've worked my way through, but I actually lost my job recently, right at the end here. I've got two semesters left, but the cost is just overwhelming, really. And, like, I'm probably not going to be able to go beyond the bachelor level, at least for a couple of years, just mainly due to cost.
Good question. How do we finance people who want to become educators
right. And
can't afford it?
I guess, can I make a comment about
sure.
As far as the teaching problem, too? Because I'm a math major, and most of my fellow students are going to be teachers, but as for myself, I look at the cost of pay for teachers based upon, like, for an engineer, for example, and there's a large difference right there. So when I see there's such a shortage of math teachers, you get the cost, and like I would make the same as, say, a liberal arts major teaching elementary school, and my degree is, I feel, at least a lot harder to acquire.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So
any comments from the panel?
Disparity in pay is a problem also.
Well, I would say that's Ed's a very good question. As under this Rising Above the Gathering Storm proposal, as a matter of fact, there was a scholarship subsidies for people to take on graduate study for science and technology, but also for science and technology education. And there also was a recommendation of pay differential for people who are highly qualified in teaching this as well. It's a recognition that we need higher pay for highly skilled people who are going to go into these fields. I think the complexity here is that The K through 12 education is really a local issue. I mean, it's not really a federal issue, and so that's why the states.
That's the point I was trying to make before.
That's why the states have to come together under this theme themselves and figure out how they're going to essentially adapt to take advantage of these opportunities and recognize the problem we've got.
Well, to recognize the problem, and anybody who has kids in public schools or any school know that the most important thing in school is sports. I mean, it's the curriculum recognizes that. The superintendent recognizes that. Friday night football rises above everything. You move the clock back to get your kids on the bus stop at 6:30 so the sports teams can have half an hour more to practice in daylight. Who cares if they're sleeping when the students are sleeping when they get to school? You don't dilute the schools. You may have schools maybe overcrowded, but we're not going to have a new school. Come on, because that's going to dilute the sports team. No one talks about what it's going to do for science or education in the schools. And until you have that discussion, we're not going to be competitive with the other countries who believe that that's more important.
Well,
there's my soapbox.
There is definitely some painful truth in what you say.
That's why it's a local problem. That's why I say it's a local problem.
Even universities have a little bit of this problem now and then. But I would say that we need the initiative. Yeah, we need the people to see at the local level. Frankly, this...
My challenge to you is, how do you make that sexy as Friday Night Football? You know, Dr. Garland, Patricia Garland, what are you going to do? How can you make this? How can you compete and bring an engineer to class or have a role model and say, well, we don't have cheerleaders for these people, but they're important also.
The point is very well made that math and science teachers, technology teachers, could easily make more money outside of the classroom and working in industry. So number one, you either have to have a passion to teach, a passion to work with children, or we need to work out ways to have alliances with engineers that are out in the workforce to work with the teachers that are in the school systems. How do you make it happen? How do you make it sexy? Once again, you change the message. Why are women going into medical professions? We can talk to young women and say, you could work side by side with a doctor as an engineer by building a pacemaker or providing new technology to develop artificial limbs. Both of those particular work occupations are exciting, and they do protect lives of individuals, and we save lives. So it is in the messaging, and I think that you can change the message both for teachers and for students.
Mm-hmm. I think that the whole thing comes down to opportunity. Young people will respond to opportunity. You know, we've been here before. In when Sputnik came up so long ago, 1957, the country surged towards science and technology. There was federal resources. There was a national need. There was the space program, go to the moon by 1970 and so on. So the opportunity was there and people went for it. I think the problem today is that there's been such a walk away from science and technology, and the opportunity young people see, they see it in professional sports. They see it in other things, and I think we need to create opportunity. We need to create better salaries. In fact, salaries are going up, as a matter of fact, as we speak, in science and technology. And I think when opportunity is there, the nation and the young people of the nation will respond.
Mm-hmm. Ralph Winger?
I think both points were very well made. One, the opportunity, and two, the message. The IEEE, for example, in the United States currently, it has set up a program called TISP, Teachers in Service Partnership, where our members who are excited about engineering, male and female, are going into the public schools, working on preferred arrangements with the teachers, designing experiments so that perhaps one day a week they'll be exposing the students to new and innovative experiments in biology and hard sciences, in mathematics. And this is providing both a message about the future and the opportunity, a first-hand look at what engineering is. And that's in grades K to 12. We've got the baby boomers going to be retiring, and that's going to be a very important bridge to cross.
1-800-989-8255 is our number. Let's go to Sarah in Atlanta. Hi, Sarah.
Hi. I am currently a graduate student in mathematics, and I want to thank you guys so much for talking about this topic. It's so important. I'm getting ready to head out and start actually teaching at the high school and college levels, and I was wondering what the panel thought my role should be. What can I do to help with this problem?
You're certified. You're finished with your education. You have your
yes,
degrees,
sir.
And you're all ready to go.
Yes.
What would you tell us what you think,
what
Sarah?
I think?
Yes.
I think that it's just a matter of me actually being someone who's highly qualified and being out there. I think that's the number one thing I can do, but I also think it's really hard to inspire students at this age, and I'm not really sure how that's going to happen.
Let me ask Patricia O'Garland to comment after I tell everybody. This is Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News. Patricia Garland, what do you suggest to
Sarah?
Well,
number one, Sarah, I congratulate you on your career choice. And I think that just by being you, being a female in a mathematics field in a high school is an amazing way to touch the lives of many students. You will be a role model for all the students, both females and males, that come through your classroom. I chose engineering because I had a female chemistry teacher in high school. So you will be touching the lives of many in a positive way. Just by your career choice, you are doing the right thing to help us with the problem that's on the table today. But second, always make your classroom exciting. Bring in maybe hands-on activities. Contact us at the Society of Women Engineers so that we can help you to bring engineering concepts into your classroom as well, to show the students how mathematics can fit the real-world activities that they would be doing once they get out of high school and into college.
All right, Sarah, good luck to you.
You know, a point that I would add here is that teachers like yourself, Sarah, will be people who will be able to take sabbaticals, and you'll be able to take, after a few years of teaching, a year off and actually work in industry, in your specialty, and you'll be able to bring back even a richer experience if you do that.
Mm-hmm. You know, you talked about the Sputnik. I'm all certainly a child of the Sputnik generation. It seems like we have an opportunity here for a Sputnik-like era, but we're sort of losing it. And I'm talking about the energy crisis that foreign oil, alternative energies. If we could motivate whole bunches of engineers like we motivated the rocket scientists of the 60s to put their minds to and come up with radical new ways or just interesting ways of doing better what we do now, there's an opportunity here, Ralph, that maybe we're losing.
We may well be losing, but I don't know that the industry is geared up to do it at this point. As I said, fundamental research is unfortunately being bypassed for current product research. But the federal government, I think, has a role to play here, just as they did in the Sputnik era. And they have wonderful national laboratories to enable it to be done.
Mm-hmm. Well, Ira, you know, that's a very good question. In fact, one of the things we call about this crisis now is the kind of boiling the frog crisis. You know, with Sputnik, it was a sudden crisis. Everybody saw it. It galvanized the nation, and people could get behind it very well. The nation gets behind national security issues. With this crisis we have now, it's happening slowly. You know, you put the frog in the water and you turn the heat up, and pretty soon the frog turns green and boils. It's a little different than a sudden crisis, but it's definitely coming. There isn't enough oil in the world for the United States, for China, India, developing countries. So we do have an energy crisis. And I think the government can get behind this initiative. And, in fact, it's part of the president's State of the Union address, part of Rising Above the Gathering Storm, is to create an energy initiative that would look for not just research in universities, but in industry, galvanize new ideas, competitive technologies, try to create an environment where new ideas are going to be highly valued in over a range of issues with energy, conservation, nuclear, for example, alternative energy, all of these techniques that are going to be required for not only our independence from security point of view, but also our independence in terms of our way of life.
All right. We're going to come back after we take a short break, talking with Ralph Windrum, president of IEEE USA, Patricia Walesko-Garland, president of Engineering Week, and also C.J. Mote, president of the University of Maryland. So stay with us. We'll be right back after this short break. Don't go away.